Good morning and welcome to the Health Matters Radio Show. I'm Neil De Silva. It's Monday. It's the 1st of July 2019. The weather is great. I hope you all had a great weekend and you are looking forward to the week ahead. On today's show, we are going to have a chat about spotting the symptoms of a heart attack. Quite a grim subject, I've no doubt you'll agree, but quite an important one as well, because actually if you can spot the signs of an impending heart attack, either in yourself or someone else, then you can often save their life. We're also going to be talking about ibuprofen, about the benefits of ibuprofen, and also some of the dangers of ibuprofen too. And in the middle, today we have our special guest interview with Wendy Jennings. Good morning, Wendy.
Good morning.
And how are you today?
Good, thank you very much.
And Wendy is the Coddywomple lady. We're going to find out in about 20 minutes. We're going to learn more about Wendy's story, and we're going to find out what Coddywomple means. I'm looking forward to that. So a quick disclaimer before we kick the show off. The purpose of the Health Matters Radio Show is to provide you with competent information on the subject matters covered and to help educate and inform you in ways that you might be able to improve your own health. However, this is on the understanding that I'm not engaged in providing medical advice, and the content in the show should not be treated as a substitute for such. If you have any concerns about your general health or you require medical or other expert assistance, please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional, which in many cases can be obtained by dialing 111 or speaking with your local pharmacist first. All the content is provided for general information only, and I encourage you to do your own research. And the show is based on my knowledge, my research, my experience and my opinion, and I disclaim any liability that is incurred from the use of or application of the content of the show. A quick reminder of this show's social media feeds. If you'd like to follow the show on Twitter, simply search at Health Radio Show. And you can follow the show's Twitter feed. On Facebook, search the Health Matters Radio Show, and you'll be able to like the show's Facebook page and obviously be kept up to date with updates and guests and what have you. You'll be able to listen again to this show and all previous shows on the media page of my website and also on the show's iTunes podcast. Go to iTunes, search the Health Matters Radio Show, and you can listen to all the previous shows there too. And my website, as a reminder, is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. If you'd like to get in touch with me, away from social media, then go to the contact page, drop me an email, and I will respond to you from there. Okay, so as I said, we're going to talk about spotting the signs of a heart attack. Now, I'm sure for those of you that watch medical dramas on a Saturday evening, you would have heard them use phrases like myocardial infarction or an MI. Now, myocardial infarction is permanent damage to the heart muscle. So myo, M-Y-O, myo means muscle, cardio refers to the heart, and infarction means the death of tissue due to lack of blood supply. And just like any other organ in the body, whilst the heart pumps blood, it also needs blood at the same time to function properly. Blood goes in, blood goes out, it pumps it around the body, but there are these things called the coronary arteries, and they actually feed the heart with the blood it needs to do its job. Now, what happens is we can have a condition called coronary artery disease, which is the narrowing or the blockage of these coronary arteries caused by atherosclerosis. Now, atherosclerosis is sometimes called a hardening or the clogging of these arteries, often caused by the buildup of bad cholesterol and fatty deposits. And you have this plaque that builds up on these inner walls of the arteries, and it restricts blood flow to the heart. Now, when the heart becomes starved of oxygen and the vital nutrients it needs to work properly, that can cause a pain called angina. And then when one or more of the coronary arteries become completely blocked, then you can have a heart attack. So sometimes that can be caused by a piece of the plaque that's built up for many, many years, breaking off and actually blocking the coronary artery. And then when the heart becomes starved of blood, it becomes starved of oxygen, and then you have a heart attack. So some of the symptoms of heart attacks, some of these are often they're misread. and they're misinterpreted. And actually, it's important that you understand these, because if you can pick up a heart attack quickly, if someone's having it or it's happening to you, then time is of the essence. And the quicker you get medical help, the more chance there is of actually recovering. So as I mentioned, angina is a chest pain or a discomfort generally in the centre of the chest, which is described as a heaviness or tightness or pressure or a numbness or a squeezing feeling in the centre of the chest that lasts for more than a few minutes, or it goes away and it comes back. Now, unfortunately, lots of people mistake this for indigestion or heartburn, and that might not be the case. So if you have that pain that doesn't go away, then maybe it's time to seek medical help. If you're having a heart attack, then you might get pain or discomfort in other areas of the upper body. So that can include the arm, the left shoulder, the back, the neck, the jaw, or the stomach. You can often have difficulty breathing or have a shortness of breath. You can start to sweat. You get a cold sweat. So regardless of the temperature, you have this cold sweat come on. That can be a symptom of a heart attack in progress. You can often feel like you're getting this choking feeling. You can feel nauseous. You can actually vomit. And sometimes what can also happen is you can feel lightheaded and dizzy. As the blood supply is starting to become restricted in the body, then obviously the brain gets starved of blood and oxygen as well. And that can cause a dizziness. It can cause weakness. And what you can also do, you can have rapid or irregular heartbeats as the heart tries to deal with the situation that's going on. So that's a heart attack. So this is when maybe the heart goes in, the heart's been starved of blood, but at this point it's not actually stopped. So that's the time to seek medical advice, because obviously if the heart stops, then we go on to a whole new level of seriousness. Now, when the heart stops, this is called a cardiac arrest. So if it's happening to someone around you, obviously they won't be breathing, they won't be moving, they won't be responding to any stimulation, they won't respond to being touched or spoken to. That's the time to definitely seek medical advice. If there is a machine nearby to restart the heart, then you can obviously you can look at the instructions on the box, and you can get advice from 999 as to how to use that machine. But when you have a cardiac arrest, or when a cardiac arrest, it's actually a very serious situation that needs immediate medical intervention. And if you're unsure about what to do in those situations, then maybe one of the things to consider is actually taking a first aid course. Now, I did a course last year, an emergency first aid course. And actually, it's one of those skills that I believe that you should have in the hope that you'll never have to use it, the need to use it and not have those skills. Because if you've got basic first aid skills, you know how to do CPR, then that might be the difference between someone living and someone dying. And I'm sure you've seen those situations where people freeze because they just don't know what to do, or they're afraid of making the situation worse. But going on a course is incredibly good value for money. I mean, these courses aren't huge amounts and they last sort of 5 or 6 hours. And you will learn skills that potentially will save someone's life. And if you're based in Kent, I can recommend a course by a company called Target First Aid. Their number is 01795 873 814, and their website is targetfirstaid.com. Now, I'm only plugging them because I did their course last year. And I would never recommend on my show anything I've not done personally. And it was really, really good. It taught me some amazing skills that hopefully I'll never have to use. But if I'm ever in a situation where someone needs help, not just with a heart attack, but also with wounds and other bits and pieces, then I have that skill to be able to help people. So I highly recommend it, whether you use Target First Aid or use another company, it doesn't really matter. But just, I do believe it is a skill that everyone should have. So if you're in a situation where someone is having a heart attack, or the first signs of a heart attack, so they're getting this pain in the chest, or they're getting maybe the arrhythmia, the irregular heartbeat, the rapid heartbeat, the cold sweats, the pressure in the chest, then that's the time to call 999. don't wait for the symptoms to go away. Even if it passes, it's better to get to hospital and get it checked out and be in a place where you can get immediate medical help than hope it just goes away, because that can lead to further issues if it does lead on to a more serious condition. So as I said, early recognition and treatment can often help in the recovery process, because the sooner you get help, the less risk there is of permanent heart damage. And they reckon that, the best time to treat a heart attack is within 1 hour of the onset of the symptoms. So you do have a very limited time. So if you're with someone and it happens, or if it's happening to you, the sooner you recognise those symptoms and you get medical assistance, then the better chance there is of having a full recovery. But some studies have shown that some people wait hours and hours and hours with these chest pains, with these symptoms, before actually recognising it as a heart attack and then getting medical help. And as I said, the longer it goes on, the more chance there is of permanent damage to the heart muscle. And whilst you're waiting for an ambulance, the guys at the other end of the line, they'll be able to give you advice as to what to do. But often what they'll recommend is if someone isn't allergic or has an issue with aspirin, then they will often recommend to swallow an adult-sized tablet, a 300-milligram tablet, while waiting for the ambulance, because the aspirin can help thin the blood and it can help restore the heart's blood supply. Some of the reasons that people delay, well, because they think that it's not happening to them. So heart attacks are becoming increasingly common in the young. But when young people have a heart attack, or they have, or they think they have a heart attack, they often believe it couldn't happen to them because they're far too young. But it's happening more and more with younger people. Perhaps the symptoms are not what people expect, so they put it down to indigestion or just heartburn, and it's actually it is the onset of a heart attack. They might not think the symptoms are serious. They might ask the advice of other people, especially family members, what's going on, and the family members just may dismiss those symptoms as this heartburn or indigestion, and that might lead to people not getting help quick enough. They might try and treat the symptoms themselves. They might think it's indigestion and take antacids. They might be in a situation where they put the care of others first. Maybe they have family members who depend on them or children, and they might think it's just too much aggravation or hassle to get medical help. So that's not great. And just remember, the longer you wait, if you have these symptoms, it might be really bad indigestion, but it's better to get to hospital and be in the right place to get it checked out, because often it is the onset of a heart attack. And the sooner you get it dealt with, the more chance there is that you can have a full recovery. So just remember, if you feel any of those symptoms, if you have this tightness in the chest, the pain, the burning, if you get that pain in the arms, the left shoulder, the back, the neck, the jaw, or you get this, the shortness of breath, the cold sweats, then maybe it's time to pick up the phone, call 111. In more serious situations, call 999. Get medical help, get medical advice, because it might just save your life or someone else around you. So after the break, we are going to go on to our guest interview of the morning with Wendy. But to take us there, we have a song from The Greatest Showman.
I close my eyes and I can see a world that's waiting up for me, that I call my own. Through the dark, through the door, through where no one's been before, but it feels like home. They can say it all sounds crazy. They can say I've lost my mind. I don't care, so call me crazy.
Oh,
There's a house we can build. Every room inside is filled with things from far away. Special things I compile, each one there to make you smile on a rainy day. They can say it all sounds crazy. They could say we've lost our minds. I don't care if they call us crazy. Run away to a world that we desire.
Every night I lie in bed, the brightest colors fill my head. For the world we're gonna make.
However big, however small, let me be part of it all. Share your dreams with me. You may be right, you may be wrong, but say that you're bringing me along to the world you see. To the world I call.
The brightest colors fill my head.
A million dreams are keeping me awake.
A million dreams, a million dreams.
I think of what the world could be. A vision of the one I see. A million dreams is all it's gonna take. A million dreams for the world we're gonna make. For the world we're gonna make.
That was A Million Dreams from the film The Greatest Showman. You're listening to the Health Matters radio show on Monday, the 1st of July, 2019. I hope you're all keeping really, really well. A quick reminder of the show's Facebook and Twitter feeds. On Twitter, if you search at Health Radio Show, you'll be able to follow the show's Twitter feed. On Facebook, search the Health Matters radio show, and you can be kept up to date with all the latest developments regarding the show and with future guests as well. And you'll be able to listen again to this show and all previous shows on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. You can drop me a line there as well, but go to the media page and you can listen to all the previous shows there. As also, you can go to iTunes if you've got an Apple device and you like podcasts. You can subscribe to the show's podcast there. Just go to iTunes and search the Health Matters radio show and you can subscribe to this show and all past and future shows as well. So today, as I mentioned, we have a special guest interview with Wendy Jennings. And Wendy is the Coddy Womple lady. So we're going to learn more about Wendy's background, her journey, how she got into doing what she's doing now. And we're also going to find out more about the word coddywomple, because I had no idea what it meant, and I'm sure most of you out there have no idea either. So we're going to find out more about that. But first, Wendy, it's great to have you on the show this morning.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
So thank you for coming on, and I'm intrigued about coddywomple. So I'm looking forward to finding out more about what that is all about. But let's start at the beginning. Let's talk about your journey and your life up to the current point. Give us all a bit of background about where you've come from, what your journey's been like, what you've done, and how you've got to where you are now.
Okay. Well, I originally set out, I was born in Tunbridge Wells, grew up in Tunbridge Wells in Kent, and I originally set out as an office administrator, secretarial, reception, all that kind of thing. I worked in a variety of industries like motor racing, would you believe?
Okay.
Print, accountancy, legal, all the then I did all the normal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Halfway through that, I got a bit disillusioned with being in an office. I didn't want to be sitting looking at a computer screen all day. So I had always had a fascination with health and well-being.
Right.
So I trained as a massage therapist in the early 2000s.
Okay.
And I worked in a clinic on a part-time basis in Tunbridge Wells for quite a few years, actually. And then eventually, after I moved to Sussex, then I had to give that up because RSI started appearing in my thumbs. I'm hypermobile. I'm a bit bendy.
Bendy-wendy.
Yeah. So I eventually had to give that up, but I still wanted to do a therapy. So I became interested in Reiki, and I now trained as a Reiki practitioner instead. And I do that as well as writing and blogging, of course.
Wow. So how long did you spend in the motor industry? Or the motor racing industry?
Well, I grew up around motor racing from a bump. My first trip to Brands Hatch was as a bump. And then Mum used to put me in my carry cot in the pit stables, garages, to sleep.
Yeah.
So basically I would sleep all the way through a race and then wake up when the noise stopped. And I still do that now. Obviously not in a carry cot, but long races on, I do tend to fall asleep. And then when it stopped, it's like, oh, what happened? I did that all the way through, and I worked at Brands from 1988 to early 90s, the British Racing and Sports Car Club, secretarial reception kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to do their awards presentations and all that sort of thing as well. So that was quite good fun. Made some good friends there too that I still have.
Some lifelong friends.
Yeah, definitely. And because Dad was still involved in it, they ran a trophy and engraving business and mm-hmm. supplied a lot of the local clubs or national clubs with championships with trophies.
Okay.
So, it was a big part of my life right up until they passed away, really. So it still is a part of my life, but not quite in the same bracket as it used to be.
Yeah.
Not quite the same now.
So when did you become interested in Reiki?
It was after I gave up massage. I had to give up massage, and after I lost Mum and Dad as well, then mm-hmm. I had nothing left in the fuel tank to be able to give. But yeah. I still wanted to learn about therapy, and Reiki came to me, really. I had a next-door neighbour that was a Reiki master, and we had long conversations about it. And then I had my first treatment of it when I was in Bali on my Kodi Wombul, which I'll come to in a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was it. I was hooked. I wanted to learn more about it. So I did my Reiki level one when I was in Australia. And then since I've been back here in the UK, I've done my level two practitioner level.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, I love it now. Yeah.
So you mentioned about losing your parents.
Mm-hmm,
Obviously, that was a big moment in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us a little bit more about what happened there?
Yeah, absolutely. Basically, Mum was diagnosed with ovarian cancer in January 2012, and she'd not been feeling very well for a few weeks. But the thing with ovarian cancer is you can easily miss the symptoms until it's too late. I mean, she had this bloated stomach, needing to pee more, feeling full very quickly. She'd had all that, but the GP didn't pick it up. When she was diagnosed, she was in about a grade four time.
Right.
And she went on to have chemo, which didn't work. And then in the middle of all of that, Dad was diagnosed with esophageal cancer. But he woke up one morning and couldn't swallow. That was it. The Tuesday after Easter, I think it was, in 2012, he just woke up.
So
I can't swallow.
It came on that quickly?
He'd always had sort of a bit of an issue swallowing or whatever anyway. But we just put that down to him.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it did literally come on that quickly. And it was quite an aggressive form because he had his diagnosis at the beginning of May, and we lost him at the end of July. So he deteriorated really quickly. He mm-hmm. couldn't have, there was, it was too far gone for him to be treated. He had a stent fitted and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It grew round it and closed it.
Yeah.
And then Mum's chemo hadn't worked. So within 48 hours of each other in the June, they had their prognoses, which were terminal. So yeah, Dad died at the end of July.
Yeah.
And then Mum she developed some blood clots on her lungs and it went to her liver, and she passed away at the beginning of September 2012, 5 weeks after my dad.
Wow.
But it was a couple of weeks before their 50th wedding anniversary, so that was kind of bittersweet, really.
Wow.
They were back together for that.
I mean, you know, we all lose our parents at some point.
Yeah.
But to lose both to such tragic circumstances, but also within a really short space of time. Mm-hmm. I mean, not many people would
had no warning.
Both parents in 5 weeks.
Yeah, there was no warning, and I'm an only child as well. So, only child, I was 40 something at the time, but you know, it was like the blanket had been pulled away from under my feet.
Mm.
It was just like everything that I knew that was normal and stable and secure was going or going to be gone.
Mm.
It was just like, I remember Dad saying to me, you do know you're going to be an orphan by the end of the year. Dad, I'm 43. That was silly. But he said, yeah, you've got to take this into consideration. Your life is going to change beyond all recognition.
So yeah. your dad sounds like he was quite pragmatic and quite matter-of-fact.
Extremely. Yeah, mm. He had a tick list of what needed to be done, and we would sit there and go through all their affairs. And it was kind of like being PA, carer, nursemaid.
Yeah.
But
so did that help you to cope with it?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
We also developed very black humour.
Rather than just pretending it wasn't going to happen.
No, we talked about it very openly so that I could start the grieving process, I suppose, really.
Yeah.
We were very open about it. And the things we discussed, the worse it got, the blacker the humour became. Mm. Where we even talked about buy one, get one free funerals and can you get double-decker coffins? And, oh, God, you wouldn't believe the things we talked about. But it made it easier so we could laugh.
Mm.
Laugh. But you do. You have to laugh, otherwise you'd crumble. Mm. So we also got the hospice had become involved by then as well, so St Barnabas House. So they were definitely my rock with all that going on, as well as friends and family.
Yeah. But, yeah. I'm a great believer that we can't always control what happens to us.
No.
But we have control over how we deal with it, how we respond to it, and how, you know, we all have good times in our life, and we all have sad times and tragic times. And,
absolutely.
Often when we're in a situation where things don't go our way or we lose people close to us, we can often feel like we are a victim and that we're out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, nothing can be further from the truth, because with things that happen to us, we don't have control of always. But how we respond,
absolutely,
how we deal with that situation is completely within our control, which is what you did. So in 2012, obviously, sadly, you lost both parents. But that took you on a different journey, didn't it? That was a that was a moment.
It's like a pivotal moment. Basically, I also, going back to what you were saying just now, I looked myself in the mirror one day and had a conversation with myself, me and I, like you do. And I just thought, Wendy, the only person that can get you through this is yourself. You can have all the support and everything that you need, but the only person that can get you through this is you.
Mm.
You've either got to sink or swim. So I chose to swim, which set me off on a bit of a thing of, well, what do I do now? Because I'm not a daughter, I'm not a sibling, I'm not a parent.
Yeah.
So who am I? So yes, I decided to go off on this coddy-womple to Bali in Australia.
Okay. So just explain for them what coddy-womple is, what it means.
It's brilliant. It's such a lovely word. It makes everybody smile. It's basically an old English slang word, which means to travel in a purposeful manner towards a vague destination.
Okay.
And it was something that my friend found when I was in Australia. And she just said, Wendy, this is just so you. This is just you to a T. And I think we're all coddy-womplers at heart at the end of the day.
So going off on your coddy-womple.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a coping mechanism? Was that just a way that you felt you could, it could maybe help you deal with the situation? To get away from
things that were going on? I was living in mum and dad's house. So after they died in 2012, I spent 2013 basically trying to sort it out because they were terrible hoarders.
Mm.
You wouldn't believe the things I found, like empty mustard pots and goodness knows what. And then I thought, well, what do I do now? I don't really know where I'm going.
Mm.
So I found one of those posters on the internet propped up one day. You know, you get on Facebook and it said, Dear Universe, show me the way forwards in a way that I can clearly understand and give me the courage and willingness to see it through. I thought, I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I printed that off on my printer and stuck it to my fridge. I just went to bed that day and didn't think anything of it. Woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning with this, right, you need to go back to Australia. Tad inconvenient. Could I not go somewhere closer to home? I've got family and friends over there, so I rang them and tested the waters out with them, and they thought it was a great idea. So yeah, that gave me a purpose then. I had a goal to work towards to go and do.
So we'll talk more about the book in a moment, but the book came out of writing these blogs about each day, each journey, each experience.
Yeah, basically I set up once I decided to go and do this travel, Coddywomple, I rather than keep writing separate posts or text messages or emails or whatever, I thought I'm just going to set up a blog just for my friends and family, just to so they can keep track of what I'm up to.
Yeah.
and that's how it started out. And I started it after Mum and Dad died, so I did a bit of background and then just updated it when something momentous happened, like I got a skip in to clear the house or the decorating or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I kept it going all the way through the trip. So, and then when I came back, I stopped because I thought, well, I'm back. It's closed now. I don't need to do anything else with it.
Mm.
But too many people said to me, friends and family said to me, you know, hang on a minute, you've got a bit more of a story that can, your story can help somebody else with grief. Because grief doesn't come with a rule book, does it? But they said, out of your ashes has risen a phoenix. You can do something with this. I was like, really? Don't be so stupid. Who's going to want to read about that? So I thought, well, if I'm going to do it, it's got to be for a reason, it's a pretty good reason to want to help other people, but I still wanted to have another purpose for it. So I decided to use it to raise some funds for the hospice, St Barnabas House in Worthing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I actually sent off my first check to them this weekend, and I'm chuffed to bits about that.
Fantastic. So, in actually writing the blogs, you did inadvertently write a book, which is interesting, because when people think about writing the book, and I can relate this to myself, it's quite a daunting prospect to start with a blank sheet of paper.
Yes, I don't think I could do that.
But you'd kind of, and I'm sure that the book is not a collection of blogs, but the blogs formed the basis, the foundation.
Yeah, when I turn it into a book, I had to dig a lot deeper into my psyche, if you like, and open up a lot more, which I was quite wary of doing. Because it's all one thing telling your friends and family on a blog that what you're up to and how you're feeling, but having to open up to a wider audience, to possible strangers.
Yeah.
And then I thought, no, just get on with it. Just do it.
Get over yourself.
Get over yourself. Put on your big girl's pants and just do it.
Yeah.
So I did it, and it was brilliant. It's a brilliant journey to do.
So how did it feel to kind of expose yourself in that way, to actually open up some, you know, pretty personal experiences to
Once I got into it, the first
the
couple
public.
Of things I had to write about was some past experiences or especially going through reliving some of the memories of Mum and Dad's illnesses.
Mm. Yeah.
But once I'd done a couple, it was okay. It felt quite cathartic in the end. I was about to use that word. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it was quite therapeutic.
Mm.
And then I thought, well, it is part of the story anyway, so just do it, just get on with it. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
And it was fine.
And it is good that you've got that purpose in mind to help people, but also to help raise a little bit of money for the hospice as well.
It's the raising money for the hospice and the raising the awareness of the signs and symptoms of ovarian cancer as well, because that's just a cancer that often gets overlooked or missed.
Yeah.
So,
I think what I'll do as well, and you gave me a leaflet about ovarian cancer and spotting the signs. So I'll cover that on a future show, because I had a read through it, and it's a bit like spotting the symptoms of a heart attack.
People
misread it, they misinterpret those signs. And actually people are worried about getting medical help or asking for help because they think it's not important or it's not serious.
Mm.
And actually even if you recognize some of the symptoms and you get medical help and they turn around and say, oh no, it's not XYZ, it's just indigestion, for example, at least you know.
Exactly.
But early intervention, as you've sadly experienced, early intervention,
it's important to get it checked out quickly,
can save people's lives.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned about the grieving process, and actually it's well documented on an academic level that there are stages of grieving. But actually, when you experience it for real, when you lose someone close to you, it's not a linear process, is it?
No.
You know, they talk about, you know, acceptance and, you know, there are, I think, 5 or 6 stages of grief.
Yeah.
And it almost makes it sound like you go through
make it sound like a rule book.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not
like a process.
Book. Yeah. Mm. Well, I suppose there is the sort of the basic, like the acceptance and whatever, but everyone's different of how they get over it.
Yeah.
Well, you don't get over
it.
Can't get round it. You just have to go through it. And there are going to be days where it hits you like a ton of bricks,
mm-hmm.
and you feel as though you've been battered by a bus. And then you roll with that wave, and then you come back and you think, oh, actually, I've got some wonderful memories, and that'll make you smile and that'll make you laugh.
Yeah.
And you think, I'm so grateful to have those memories or whatever. And they bring you comfort. And then something else will happen and you'll be hit by a bus again or whatever. But it does, I found that it does sort of level out a bit. It never goes away.
No, it doesn't go away.
You just learn to live with it. It becomes part of you.
Yeah.
And your memories stay with you. They're tucked safe in your heart. They don't leave you.
And the really inspirational thing about you is, this tragedy, this sadness of losing both parents so quickly, it happened.
Mm.
And it's one of those situations that, and I'm sure people out there will perhaps recognise and relate to it, that it's one of those situations, even when you lose one parent or you lose, you know, a grandparent or an aunt or an uncle or a sibling or even just a good friend, it can have that much of an impact on you that it can define you, it can potentially destroy you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this was the whole point I made about things happen to us that we can't control, but how we deal with it is within our control. And you, you know, the inspiration I take from you is you took control of a sad situation.
It probably has defined me in some respect, because I wouldn't be doing this.
But in a positive way.
But I've wanted to do it in a positive way. I wanted to have something positive come out of it. And because, as I say, I'm an only one, it's the way of they can live on now.
Yes.
I don't have kids, so there's not going to be little moms and dads running around.
Yeah.
Some people might say that's a bonus, but, especially where I'm concerned. But it was something that I want, they won't be forgotten now.
Yeah.
And that's important to me.
So it's kind of their legacy and also your legacy as well, which is great.
Yeah, I feel their presence and influence all the time. So, got goosebumps now.
Very inspiring, very inspiring. So let's talk a little bit more about the book itself. What kind of feedback have you had from people that have gone through the book and read the book?
Amazing feedback. I've had one friend read it, and she said it's opened up a wanderlust in her that she never knew she had. And some other people, like a couple of other people I know that have recently lost loved ones, and they've read it and they've thought, no, this has given us some help. This has helped us deal with the finality of it all and good. So, but I also put together at the back like a little help directory.
Okay.
So if therapists or people that work with grief and bereavement, so that if somebody is stuck and they don't want to talk to me, but they can pick up the phone to somebody, you know, and can have, who's got empathy with them.
Yeah.
And all that, they're all known to me personally, so I wouldn't have just taken anybody off
Random.
The street and stick your details in my book. A lot of people have said to me that it's been helpful and it's comforting and it's made them laugh. That's the bit that makes, as long as I can make people laugh through it all as well.
Yeah.
Yes, it's made them cry, but it's the humour in it, I think.
It certainly seems to me it works on many levels. So you've got a bit of education about how to spot the signs of undiagnosed ovarian cancer.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
You've then got that coping with losing someone close to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the inspiration of actually using a sad situation and actually doing something with that's positive. I think it works.
It is possible to enjoy life after loss.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So how can listeners get hold of the book?
Okay, well, it's available through my website, thecoddywomporelady.com, and it takes you through to a PayPal link.
Yep.
If you're not happy about going through to a PayPal link, there's my email on there as well, which is hello@thecoddywomporelady.com, and you can email me and I'll give you the details of how to do it that way.
Yep.
Or, yeah, the it's through me directly. I haven't gone, it's not on Amazon or anything like that.
Not yet.
Not yet. I'm hoping to also put it on audio and or something like that later on. But at the moment, it's not on Amazon.
Fantastic.
So, yes, directly through me.
So we're partway through 2019. Mm-hmm. So where does the rest of 2019 take you, and what are your plans for 2020?
Very good question. It's a bit of a coddywomple, they don't really know. I'm going to be doing a few events. I'm doing a summer fair down in Henfield, where it all happened, in West Sussex, mm-hmm. in a couple of weeks' time with St Barnabas, and also, again, for another event down there in September. And then I'm just going to build the momentum of it, really.
Yeah.
It's getting out there. I'm more than happy to turn up and give talks mm-hmm. about the book or my journey or whatever to anyone that thinks that it might be useful. Or I'm putting up some workshops together with my friend Caroline Aldish. She's a mindfulness coach, and we want to do something like she can do her mindfulness and I can use something about journaling mm-hmm. for positive reasons.
Yeah.
And things like that. So there's loads of things in the pipeline, and just trying to cobble it all together at the moment.
And it's great that, as I say, you've taken what was a sad situation, a sad occurrence, and
it's given me back a purpose in life.
Yeah, and it's given you that direction.
Yeah.
And like I say, I think it's very empowering to think that will be your legacy and your parents' legacy as well.
I think of it more as my parents' legacy rather than mine. I suppose it is mine. It will be mine as well. But I don't think of it like that. I think of it as theirs.
So just a quick reminder, if people want to get hold of the book, your website address is?
It's thecoddywomplelady.com. Mm-hmm. Email is hello@thecoddywomplelady.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on Facebook at The Coddywomplelady. And I'm on Twitter at WJCoddywomple.
So for people that get a hold of the book, read the book, there's also this closed group you've got, isn't it?
And I've got the Facebook. Good memory. I'd forgotten about that. I've put together a small closed group for people that have read the book who just want some extra support and or just interested to know more. They can talk to each other, support each other if they're struggling.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's always somebody there to listen. If it's not me, it's one of the
group. I think it's that realisation that you're not alone.
Yeah, you don't have to go through this alone. Yeah. And that's my thing now. My overarching thing now is to say there is life after. You can enjoy life after loss.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to dare to dream, because you don't know where it might take you.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you're not alone. If you can't get hold of me, which I make damn sure you can, mm-hmm. then there are people out there that can help.
And we all now know what coddywomple means.
And you now know what coddywomple means.
And I look forward to reading the book. Thank you for coming on the show this morning, Wendy. It's been really inspiring to learn more about your journey. And it's been great, as I say, I've said it a few times, but I will say it one more time. It's great that you've taken a sad situation and really used it to drive yourself forward and to help and inspire others. I think that's brilliant.
Hopefully, that's the plan.
Thank you. Thanks, Wendy.
Thank you very much.
After the break, we're going to have a quick chat about ibuprofen. But to take us there, we have a classic from John Denver.
You fill up my senses like night in a forest, like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain, like a storm in the desert, like a sleepy blue ocean. You fill up my senses, come fill me again. Come let me love you, let me give my life to you, let me drown in your laughter, let me die in your let me always be with you. Come let me love you, come love me again.
sleepy blue ocean. You fill up my senses. Come fill me again.
That was John Denver and Annie's Song. You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show. A quick reminder of the show's Twitter feed, at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, search the Health Matters Radio Show and you can follow the show's Facebook page. And you'll be able to listen again to this show on the media page of my website and on iTunes podcast as well. And you can also listen to all the previous shows as well. And if you'd like to get in touch with me away from social media, please drop me a line via my website, www.i-nutrition.co.uk. So for the next few minutes, we're going to have a chat about ibuprofen. So ibuprofen, as many people know, is a type of painkiller. Okay, so there's lots of painkillers on the market. We have non-opioid painkillers, so that would be paracetamol. We have anti-inflammatory drugs, so that would include ibuprofen and naproxen. These are often known as non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, or NSAIDs. We have compound painkillers, so these are when two drugs are put together. So an example of that would be cocodamol, which is a combination of paracetamol and codeine. And then we have the opioid painkillers, so they include codeine, tramadol and morphine. But today we're going to talk about ibuprofen because it is a very common painkiller that you can get not over the counter, whatever the opposite of that is, down the medicine aisle. There are limits on how much you can buy in any one go, and there are good reasons for that. But there's also it's important to understand that there are side effects to taking ibuprofen, as there are for many drugs. And there's some people that shouldn't be taking ibuprofen. And a lot of people don't realise that there are groups of people to which ibuprofen is not particularly good. So why would people take ibuprofen in particular? Well, it's really good at relieving short-term fevers and also mild to moderate pain and inflammation as well. So it might ease things like a tension headache or a migraine. It can help ease sinus pain. It can help ease backache, muscular pains, period pain, sore throats. If you've got a joint or tendon sprains, such as things like tennis elbow, ibuprofen is excellent. But it also might help with things like arthritis and with a fever or high temperature. But the thing to note with any painkiller, excuse me, is the fact that it only provides temporary relief. It deals with the symptoms. It does not cure the condition. So with any painkillers, if you're taking them on a regular basis for a particular condition, do you know what? You might want to get medical help, because continuing to deal with the symptom and not the cause is not a particularly useful long-term strategy. So ibuprofen works by actually reducing the ability of your body to make prostaglandins. So prostaglandins are chemicals that promote pain, inflammation, and fever. So ibuprofen works on this chemical pathway that we have for pain, this particular chemical pathway, and it actually inhibits these prostaglandins. Now, when you've got less prostaglandins in your body, the fever can ease, the pain and inflammation is often reduced. But it doesn't last forever. They start when the effects of the ibuprofen wear off, then the prostaglandins start to build up again. And then obviously you take more ibuprofen to bring it back down. So you can see how it's not a smart long-term strategy. If you're taking it short-term and it eases the problem and the fever goes or the inflammation goes, happy days. But if it's a long-term thing where you're constantly popping ibuprofen, then maybe you need to talk to a doctor. Ibuprofen comes in lots of different strengths and it comes in lots of different forms. It used to be just tablets, but now you can get capsules, you can get gels, and you can also get ibuprofen liquid. But some of the side effects and the risks of ibuprofen include things like upset stomach, you can get nausea, you can get diarrhea, you can get indigestion. It can give you headaches, ironically. Taking a painkiller to ease headaches can give you, or to ease inflammation can give you headaches. It can cause high blood pressure. It can cause fluid retention. It can also cause dizziness as well. But some of the more serious side effects, if you detect these, you should get medical help. So things like difficulty breathing, swollen ankles, if it causes you to vomit and the vomit is dark, that can be a big problem. But also, if it changes the colour of your stools and you start passing black stools, it can be an indication that the ibuprofen has caused intestinal bleeding. And obviously, that's when you should get medical help. So if you're not sure and you think you're suffering with some side effects, and of course, talk to your doctor, talk to your pharmacist, dial 111, but do seek medical advice. And people that shouldn't take ibuprofen include people that are pregnant, unless it's been prescribed by a doctor. If you've had a strong or unpleasant reaction to aspirin or any other NSAIDs, you shouldn't be taking ibuprofen. If you've had a stomach ulcer at any time in your life, you should not take ibuprofen. If you've had severe heart failure or you are suffering with liver disease, ibuprofen shouldn't be taken. And if you're taking low-dose aspirin for cardiovascular reasons, you shouldn't be taking ibuprofen unless on the medical advice of your doctor. Also, if you're aged over 65 or you're breastfeeding or you have asthma or lupus or Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis or you've got kidney issues or you've got high blood pressure or you've ever had a stroke or you've got other heart problems like angina or you ever have a history of heart attacks, then you shouldn't really be taking ibuprofen unless under medical supervision. And also bear in mind that ibuprofen can interact with other drugs as well, and it can cause side effects and it can stop other medication working properly. If you're in any doubt, talk to your doctor, talk to your pharmacist, do seek advice, read the leaflets. But if you're not sure, do seek medical advice. And if you are susceptible to issues with ibuprofen, then if you've got a fever, then paracetamol can often bring the fever down. But again, talk to your doctors if you are unsure. Well, we are out of time for today. I hope you've enjoyed the show. I hope you found it useful to learn more about heart attacks and ibuprofen. And once again, thank you, Wendy, for coming on the show. It's been a genuine pleasure for you to come.
Thank you for having me. It's good fun.
So after the break, we will have the Channel Radio News and Weather. If you'd like to get in touch with me between shows, please do so via my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And if you'd like to come on the show as a guest, as Wendy has done today, and talk about your journey and your life, and how you are helping people today, then please give me a shout, drop me a line, find my website, and we'll see about getting you on the show on a future date. But until next week, I wish you a happy and healthy week ahead, and I will catch you again next Monday.
There's no room, no space to rent in this town. Turn for good.